InternetCases.com podcast, April 1st, 2005.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's podcast coming to you in MP3 from Chicago, Illinois, USA. I'm Evan Brown, an attorney, and I'm the author of the weblog found at InternetCases.com. Thanks for tuning in. This week, I'd like to discuss with you a case that comes to us from the state of Kentucky. It's a criminal case heard on appeal called Ross Carter versus Commonwealth, and you may have read about it in a March 27th posting on InternetCases.com titled, Internet Research by Juror, No Basis for Mistrial in Kentucky Court. You know, jury trials really capture America's imagination, and jurors' conduct in some high-profile cases has gotten a lot of attention in the media in the past few months. Think back to last year in the Scott Peterson trial, where more than one juror was dismissed during the proceedings. In the case we're talking about here today, a Kentucky woman was on trial for the crime of child abuse. As you likely know, in a criminal trial, one of the things that the prosecution has to prove to get a conviction is that the defendant acted with a particular mental state in committing the crime. For example, the prosecutor has to prove, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the defendant acted knowingly or intentionally or recklessly. When the trial is over and the jury is sent back to deliberate, the judge will give them instructions on how to weigh and consider the evidence. In a criminal case, these instructions will include the definitions of the required mental states. Jurors aren't required to abandon their common sense when deliberating, but they also aren't supposed to do any outside research about the case. Instead, they're supposed to rely on the instructions that the judge gives them. Well, apparently one of the jurors in this case couldn't wait till the end of the trial to get instructions. One evening during the trial, after the proceedings had been adjourned for the day, this juror logged onto the internet and looked up the legal definitions for the various mental states required to sustain a conviction. Now, this is clearly against the rules, and after the defendant found out about this outside research, she brought it up to the judge and asked for a mistrial. Judges are very busy people and don't like to duplicate efforts, so you can imagine this judge wasn't too thrilled about the prospect of having to quit this trial and start over. So the judge took the juror aside and asked a few questions and learned that the juror hadn't shared any of the information she downloaded with any of the other jurors. The judge also found out that the definitions she'd printed out were precisely the same as those that were in the jury instructions. Evidently, the judge thought there was no harm in this, so the court denied the motion for mistrial. The appellate court agreed there was no harm and affirmed the denial of the motion for mistrial. The question on appeal was whether the trial court had abused its discretion when considering if the internet research denied the defendant a fair trial. The appellate court held that the trial court didn't abuse its discretion. Declaring a mistrial is an extreme remedy, and there was no manifest necessity requiring it in this situation. The court looked to the record as a whole, and it didn't appear that the outcome of the trial was affected, nor did it appear that the defendant's substantial rights were affected. So the court properly had denied the motion. Well, that's it for this week's podcast. Thanks for listening. Remember, all that I've said here is merely for your information and entertainment. If you need legal advice, please personally consult with an attorney. For more information on the music you're hearing in this podcast, be sure to check out the show notes and the post accompanying this podcast. As always, your comments are welcome. Send me an email at ebrown@internetcases.com. I'll talk to you again next Friday.